My goodness, isn't that beautiful? Now, anyone who's been around Fremantle for any length of time, short time even, will know that that was Jude Edison playing the fiddle.
Hi, Michael.
Well, welcome to the podcast, Jude.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure.
Well, this is going to be fun.
It is. I'm now, looking forward to it.
Really, you could call that a fiddle with a piece like that, couldn't you? It's almost like a jig.
That was a jig. It was, so fiddle and violin are interchangeable words, but fiddle's more commonly used for folk music, Celtic music, Americana music, folk music. Although sometimes in orchestras, conductors do refer to the fiddles.
Well, it's great. And the first time I heard you playing the fiddle, perhaps it was just the violin, was playing Christmas carols around the streets of South Fremantle.
That's an annual highlight of my musical and social career.
It really is something beautifully community orientated, isn't it?
It really is. It is.
One of the great things of living in
really
Fremantle.
It really is. So thanks to Peter and Benita for organising that. And we regularly play at the local hotel, and then anyone who is struggling a bit and might need a bit of cheering up, we play Christmas carols for them.
It is. It's both touching and delightful.
I love that tradition.
Yeah. So when did you become acquainted with a violin?
My introduction to music really was in the Wheatbelt Northam through a family, and one of my earliest musical experiences was actually playing Christmas carols. Well, in fact, singing Christmas carols on the back of a truck as we went around the streets of Northam, and that really was a highlight of the year. So that was one of my earliest musical experiences from when I was very young. But then at the age of 7, moved to Perth and started playing the violin because my older siblings did. And so that's what I did. But apparently I really wanted to. I can't even remember. I was young.
I get the strong impression you've always really wanted to.
I think so. I do love the... It's a really meaningful way of connecting with people through music, I find.
Well, I mean, amongst the other things, in no particular chronological order, you've won the Golden Fiddle Award for string players.
Yes.
Just a couple of years ago.
In Tamworth. Country Music Festival.
Isn't that something?
That was something. So that was for playing, for performing, for teaching, and for academic.
Yeah.
And for academic.
Isn't that brilliant?
It was.
And to be recognised like that. But you've obviously always been talented.
Yeah, talented's a
overused word?
Well, it's an easy word to use, I think, for someone who works really hard. In my case, there may be some musical aptitude there, but it's hard work. I remember a quote by Charlie Parker, I think. Someone said, 17 hours of practice a day and they call me a genius. So for me, it's work that's got me to anywhere close to where I am.
So you're just a kid sort of starting primary school when you more formally have a violin in your hand.
Yes.
And you go off for lessons, or were you being taught within the family?
Lessons. It was the Suzuki method, which was new to Perth at that time in the 70s. The first teacher in WA, a chap called George Coleman. But part of the Suzuki method is that the parent, some caregiver, in my case, my mother, is really involved and goes along to the lessons. But also there was a Saturday morning group lesson, which became a social event as well. So really, I think for teaching music or for learning music as a young child, it needs to be, it's more effective if it's just what the family does, and then it's also a social thing. So it's just normal life rather than just isolated
Well, it's always struck me that Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart didn't come out of thin air.
He did not come out of thin air, no. And nor did his sister, who, of course, didn't get the acclaim or wasn't allowed to pursue her career to the same extent that he did.
That's a very interesting point. You know, I go along to the Wasso concerts, for example, at the moment, and I seem to make a count how many women are there playing.
Yeah.
And a lot of the violinists seem to be young women these days.
Yes, which is...
Has there been a sort of a cultural shift in all of this?
Oh, completely, certainly since Mozart's day.
But even in our lifetimes.
There really is, because, of course... we as women are just as capable as men. And then the Perth Symphony Orchestra, which in which I play, that's predominantly women.
Yes.
That's and a lot of young women too.
Yes.
So, yeah, good on them.
So there are outlets, but at the same time, you know, people used to say to, you know, Mrs. Worthington, don't put your daughter on the stage. I guess for musicians too, it's not a necessarily secure career, is it, lying ahead?
It can be for the few. So there are permanent positions in Wasso, of course, which is like a permanent job anywhere. You've got that for long term. There's also a lot of casual positions, but yes, the life of a working musician is. Usually supplemented by teaching.
But you also play in, well, I saw you recently at a house concert in South Fremantle.
Is a joy.
With the Sign of Four.
The Sign of Four, and I think that night we were Sign of Five, weren't we?
You were the Sign of Five, in fact. I think there might have been a blow-in sixth.
We have been Sign of Seven at times. Sign of Four is, that's a real joy. And the world and opportunity of house concerts is, can't thank our house concert hosts enough for allowing us to perform there and just creating that opportunity for us to perform and share with audiences. And I think it's my favourite environment to play in, and I think from what I hear from audiences, it's an intimate environment, and I think everyone is happy.
I'm really interested and pleased to hear you say that. Having been to a couple of house concerts, there's something not only intimate about it, but it seems that, you know, the music is more real. They're performing. You can see the joy on people's faces.
Yes, it's close up, which is intimate. And then we, as performers, get to interact with the audience, both visually as we're playing, like eye contact and seeing and smiling, and then in the interval and post and pre and post concert too, we get to say hello, and also a lot of it's word of mouth anyway, so. It's often friends or friends of friends or friends or people who've heard of us, and so there's a real human connection there.
A few grown-up groupies.
People do come again, which is really we're just so grateful for that.
So I mean, we've already indicated a classical training. We'll come back to that.
Yeah.
But you're suddenly. Now doing all sorts of things. Sign of Four. Explain to people who haven't heard the Sign of Four, and we'll tell them to go and click on the social media site to find out the next gig.
Yes,
but
yes.
How did it come into being? Who are the musicians who play in it? And what is the repertoire?
Okay, so Sign of Four is it started out as a contemporary string quartet. So I met a most inspiring musician, Shenzo Gregorio, at Tamworth Country Music Festival in 2018, I think. And he's a remarkable violinist who, began classically but has got a phenomenal ability to improvise, and I was most inspired. So I ended up doing an honours thesis on his artistry to discern how he learned to do what he can do, and also just his artistry. So after that, I wanted to put into practice some of what I'd learned from him, and continued my academic study through ECU to turn. I had some tuition with him, fortunately, through a scholarship through ECU, and that turned into a master's project to document that tuition, because it was a significant amount of tuition, and that then subsequently turned into a PhD. But in order to put into practice some of what I was learning from Shenzo, we contemplated the idea of forming a contemporary string quartet, something that we could draw on our classical foundations, but extend the sonic spectrum of a string quartet. And we decided to include a guitar, look for a guitarist instead of the traditional two violins, viola and cello. So we chose a guitarist who I'd known from since he was a child in Albany. His name's Made Salapak, beautiful classically trained guitarist who's extended into performing in all sorts of genres. And then I'd been at WAPA studying jazz improvisation with a phenomenal young violinist, actually multi-instrumentalist, Daniel Dreeberg, who is now very, very sought after, and just a beautiful and creative and highly skilled musician. So he joined us to make up the fourth member of Sign of Four, and he's also a beautiful vocalist. And then for the recent series of house concerts, we also played with Daniel's younger brother, Joel Dreeberg, who's a brilliant drummer, percussionist, who's currently studying at ECU through WAPA.
Watching the four or five of you at the recent Sign of Four concert was really something. You mentioned Daniel, he was trying to work out what instrument he was playing. He was switching from this to that.
Yes, and then vocals as well.
And then vocals with a lovely voice.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Oh, something. And then Shenzo, he plays that strange instrument.
Shenzo does play, he plays an octave viola, which is, it's a violin-sized amplified instrument, a carbon fibre instrument, but it's got the range of a cello, and he plays it like no one else in the world. It's a Queensland made instrument, David Guscott, but Shenzo has created, no one in the world does what he does. When Joel's not there, he's our percussionist and our bass player and our absolute groove maker.
Just amazing. And he can carry that instrument in his back pocket, it seems to me.
He does. He has a soft case for it and just puts it in his suitcase because it's fairly indestructible, although he does his best to destruct it the way he plays. No, that's not
true. It's probably a reason not to be a double bass player, is it? It's a bit harder to lug it around.
Well, Shenzo claims that he's always wanted to be... Well, he always wanted to be a drummer, and then he wanted to be a bass player, but he ended up playing the violin. So he's expanded and, he's invented these sounds. For example, we play some Indian repertoire, and he plays, he imitates an oud on the, a tabla. He can also imitate an oud. But for the Indian bass pieces, he is our tabla player, and what he does on the octave viola to imitate a tabla is well worth experiencing.
Now, Jude, the name, the word, the place, Tamworth, has come up more than once in this conversation so far. A lot of people know Tamworth as country music.
country music
centre. And
yes,
I remember I had a neighbour once who much older who wanted to sing and to go to Tamworth each year. He wanted to be discovered in his late 60s, I think. I'm not sure he was, but there's a great attraction. How did you finish up being in Tamworth?
I met another remarkably versatile and brilliant musician called Andrew Claremont. He initially came over to Fairbridge Festival in WA with a group called Totally Gorgeous, which was, they're a great band. Check them out, play instruments. All their instruments are made of gourds, homegrown gourds, and created and made by Penelope Swales, who's a member of the band. Fabulous band. And so I met him at a local festival, and I said, oh, I'd love to play and, you know, collaborate with you again, but I live in West Australia. He goes, oh, what does that matter? So anyway, over the years, he invited me to Tamworth, and that's been very highly influential at Tamworth. So he's got a group called Andrew Claremont Supper Club, which is he is the centre of it. He's a travelling musician. He doesn't own a home. He has a car, a van, and he travels from musical event to a musical event and gathers people on his travels throughout Australia and beyond.
What's interesting is that some people who might think that you just play bluegrass or even just Celtic or, I don't know, swing, jazz, because they've heard you playing just that, of course, classical. And what else? You've mentioned Americana earlier.
Yes.
So how do you get into one genre? I always think that people are in one and stay there and not allowed out.
I think the real experts do that.
Oh,
but,
I doubt it.
But I've got a... I cannot say which is my favourite type of music.
Oh, except, that was going to be my next question.
Except I think really it's the type of music I'm playing at the time. I grew up with classical music, which was fairly predominantly European music. I love music that can be... I love music that I can dance to, or audiences can dance to. So there's more of a connection than just sitting there listening. So with dance, of course, there's a really strong connection between the performer and the enjoyer, or the audience, through dancing. So I love that. So any type of, Celtic music, and then Americana music. I first experienced bluegrass through Andrew's Supper Club. And his Supper Club is not just country music at the Country Music Festival. He calls it country's music. So really anything goes in his Supper Club at the Tamworth Country Music Festival, which, as I said, is where I met Shenzo, and Daniel came over there 2 years ago, so he's been there twice. And he was also awarded a Golden Fiddle Award last year, not this year. Last year he was also the recipient of a Golden Fiddle Award.
Really taking the proficiencies and the talent that's to be recognised in this state around the country.
Oh, it's, yeah, we're really lucky. And having people like Andrew, who is so inclusive, Shenzo, who considers his role as a musician to make other people sound good, or to provide a foundation where other people sound good, which is what he does in Sign of Four. His bass and percussion and just lifts our whole group and makes us sound good.
But I mean, there are also the festivals.
Festivals, yes.
Also the different groups you play with.
Yes.
I mean, it's obviously keeps growing. You meet people and something else comes up.
Festivals.
Tell our listeners something about the festivals to start with.
Oh, well, festivals, the long may they live, long may they continue. And it's great to see Fairbridge Festival coming back. Because the Fairbridge Festival, as I said, that's where I met Andrew. That's where I've met so many people. So just absolute credit to and appreciation to all the work that's gone into those festivals, and it's great to see it's got a new life again. So everyone, encourage people to support live music, but to support festivals.
There's something joyous. I mean, and people do dance at festivals.
Oh, there is nothing like a festival, that total immersion in it for, it's usually for more than one day, but yeah, the total immersion where you, a musician gets to perform their own repertoire, but also to hear other people's music, to collaborate with musicians in the wee hours, the jams that go on, the connections, the networking, the friendships that are formed between audiences and musicians. And
Jude, the other thing you mentioned earlier, I mean, people get recognised sometimes after years and years and years of hard work, all the practice that just goes in for a performance. Tell us a little bit about that. I mean, you play with these different groups. Even the Cider 4, you've got another gig coming on. I mean, you have to get ready. There are those groups that you play with regularly and you sort of, I suppose, could almost walk in and do it. But the hard work that goes into being prepared for a festival or a house concert or something more formal.
Yeah, that is true. It's really just a constant thing is, as a musician, is keeping, that there is a saying, you're only as good as your last gig. So you've got to stay on the top of your game as much as you can if you want to get another gig. And it's more of a way of life than a career. If you gave an hourly rate to what we do, we might let's not go there. But it's
your bank balances would be
huge. The bank balance. We do it because we love it, but it is also really nice to get some financial reward.
I'm guessing, though, that when you're a kid and then a teenager and stayed with music, I think you had a sort of a high school age, a scholarship, you must have worked hard again, practiced hard, both theory and practice.
Yeah, as I say, it really is just a constant practice is something that, again, another saying that one of my teachers told us, if you want to eat that day, you've got to practice that day. Or you only have to practice on the days that you want to eat. So, yes.
So required to be, one, to be dedicated, and from what you're saying, it's great to have these wonderful musical colleagues around you who plainly inspire you.
Absolutely inspire me, yeah.
Come back to teaching, because I think you've been involved in that as well as the recipient of people teaching music.
Yes, especially when I was living in the Great Southern in between Albany and Denmark, I established a string program at the Golden Hill Steiner School in Denmark and ran that for 13 years. And that was, that was an absolute joy. The Steiner School was committed to providing that opportunity for the children, and ended up forming professional groups with some of my students. There was another teacher, there still is another teacher, Marie Limmendun, down there, and we were the two music teachers in Denmark, but then also very inspired by the Albany music scene, in particular Mike Hyder, a great teacher down there, Margaret Gunson, fabulous teacher, Helen Grandage, Vicky Reynolds, Julie Parrish, yeah, lots of, there was at some stage about 7 violin teachers in between Albany and Denmark. So, and we had between us, I think, 200 students.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. So,
I say amazing, it's probably not amazing, but it's wonderful.
It's wonderful. It was amazing too. So yes, Margaret and Mike and another Margaret Crossan set up a group called Just Fiddling, which I was a part of and really inspired me to teach, to set up the Denmark Fiddlers in Denmark, obviously, and to encourage and to inspire children by playing folk music, as well as, if they wanted to, their classical repertoire and do their exams and that type of thing. But as some light relief, we would play Celtic or American folk music and in groups and leap around the stage. And,
as coincidence would have it, I drove past the Denmark Stein School on Sunday.
Oh, yes.
Which brings me to this whole question of yes, musical education. Yours, but then you're a teacher, you're encouraging kids, and it's happening in schools. I mean, there was always a musical program in schools, as far back as I can remember. You'd learn to sing, you'd learn to dance. There was some sort of terrible sort of musical instruments around in the day. But how important is it that schools have decent programs?
Oh, in my opinion, absolutely, absolutely vital. And there are some fabulous music programs in schools. There's IMS, which is the Instrumental School of Music. That's the state school program that is really great. And then there's private lessons as well. But yes, can't talk highly enough about the importance of musical education and singing as well, of course.
So you in a sense have a violin thrust into your hands.
Yes.
But how do kids choose an instrument? Is it that they try everything out and decide they like one more than the other?
I think they're, look, I've not worked in the IMS program before, and I'm not really an expert in this, but from what I know, there is an aptitude test, I believe, and then those people who show some sort of natural ability do get to choose which instrument they'd like, depending on which school they're at. I suppose the choice is dependent on what instruments are available, I'm imagining. And then I've talked to some people who said they really wanted to do this, but you know, a particular instrument, but the music teacher said, oh, we really need a so-and-so player. So they got that was the path ahead for them. But yes, a lot of the musicians that I work with in Perth Symphony Orchestra are also teachers at Perth schools, and they're wonderful musicians themselves. But yeah, they
are very lucky as a community to have these really quite dedicated musicians like you.
Absolutely.
And how did you? You've alluded to it, and you've touched on it, but how did you get into and decide to pursue a PhD, which I know you're extremely close to concluding?
Oh yes, thank goodness. Thank goodness, and thanks to ECU for supporting me through with that. So it was in 2018. I went to I'd been teaching at the Golden Hill Steiner School for a long time, and I began to think that I really wanted to spend more time playing than teaching, because I was teaching full-time for 13 years. And I started thinking, oh gosh, I'd love to play. And so I ended up going to music camps, music little festivals, a lot with Andrew Claremont, who I've talked about, but there was one in particular, String Mania, in Victoria. It's still going, String Mania. It's absolutely brilliant music camp. And Chris Stone and Holly Downs and their colleagues that encourages all sorts of teachers. They have really good teachers, and they encourage they teach all different genres, to mainly for string players. Anyway, I went there, and there was a Scottish teacher, Alistair Fraser, who's a world-renowned Scottish fiddler, and also a young man called Adam Sutherland. And anyway, I went to their fiddle camps in Scotland, and then I was so inspired, I decided I would love to do a master's in folk music, maybe at the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland. And anyway, I had not yet completed my undergrad, which I'd begun last millennium. Anyway,
back to the books.
So I decided to go back and complete my undergrad, which then would allow me to do postgrad studies. So I did that through ECU.
You did that with first class honours, I think.
I did that with first class honours, and that honours was on the artistry of Shenzo. So the circle is getting complete. But I did completed my classical degree with brilliant teacher Paul Wright.
We see occasionally playing here in the
Fremantle Chamber. Yeah, that's right. So he was my teacher back in the 1980s, and coincidentally, he was my teacher back in 2019. So I finished that degree with the honours, and then was encouraged by the university, who had awarded me a scholarship to study with Shenzo. I was encouraged to turn that into a master's. And I thought, how hard could that be? All I need to do is just document what I did with Shenzo, and there's a master's. They said, if you just add a little bit about sine of four, then that's a PhD. And I thought, oh, well, that's easy then. So it was really
a few more semicolons and colons.
Yes, it was. One thing led to another, shall we say? And when I say how hard could that be, it was hard.
it's wonderful, though, because you're not playing; you're thinking about it. The whole process by which these things have happened. You've created a new genre, really, with Sign of Four.
We're certainly blending lots of genres, and I think what we have created is unique. A string quartet with a guitar and mandolin, but a four-part string ensemble with vocals that really is doing its own thing. And with the help of all of us, we all bring our talents to it. And there's
you bring a lot of joy to it.
We bring a lot of joy and spontaneity, because my PhD was based around improvising as a classical violinist or a classically trained violinist. As a classically trained violinist, we're not taught to improvise. It's about reading the notated music or imitating. The Suzuki method is imitating what we hear and playing it note for note. But to extrapolate or improvise on that is not encouraged. So I had significant hesitation in improvising. Which I've heard from my classical colleagues that is a common thing, because we just have not done it. So yeah,
is it frowned upon, or is it just something you're not trained to do, well, and it's a bit hard to shift the brain?
Both. So in an orchestral setting, or if we're performing a particular piece of music, our job is not to start making it our own. It's not to deviate from the written score. So we play it verbatim when we're playing classical works.
Don't change the composer's notes.
Yes, that's right. That's right, and that's been a common thing since Beethoven's time, that the notated score was the word of God or the word of the composer. So,
but let's talk about composing. Not long ago, I've lost track of time. Circus WA put on a marvellous performance, I think, in the Heath Ledger Theatre or one of those nearby in the State Theatre Centre. It was a production called Bespoke, capital B,
apostrophe spoke.
And I tell you what, the performers in this circus, as you know better than I, have various forms of disability, but they performed this circus to this music, and I looked down and I thought, is that Jude Edison playing down there? And it was. Mm. The music was magnificent. Mm. I wanted to go out and buy it, a recording of it straight away, but I had tears in my eyes from the the circus performance, so I was sort of caught up. How did that all happen, and the composing?
Okay, so that was a real pleasure. Thanks to Joe Smith, the artistic director.
Artistic director of the circus.
And more, yeah.
Yes, and more.
So she chose me and Shenzo and Maya Harcourt, a brilliant young singer. We were the musicians for that show, very happily so. And so, yeah, as you said, so the music was inspired in different ways, but often through the performance, or through the, we would see what the performers were doing. Say, for example, on the trapeze, we would watch them devising their act, perhaps, or even rehearsing their act, and the music was inspired by watching their act, or by, I think they worked both, they co-inspired each other, actually, the music and the final
That's
performance.
That's what I was wondering. Is it, in a sense, some improvisation to responding to what you see and then turning it into something more formal?
Yes, there was an element of improvisation in the show because we were performing live in the show, which was essential but also just very beautiful. So we could follow the performers. They were also inspired by us. For some of this, one particular piece, a young girl with Down syndrome, she was anxious about doing her act, and we asked her, what's your favourite piece of music? And so she played us something on a streaming platform, and we thought, okay, well, let's write something with a similar feel to that. And then Maya just made up some lyrics on the spot, and this young woman was really happy with that, and that inspired her to get up and perform.
Rewarding is that?
It absolutely rewarding. I mean, when I talk about music being a conduit for connection with people, that's an absolute example of connecting with our fellow performers and mutually inspiring each other to create something meaningful.
Well, it's just fabulous. I mean, that performance, I thought, gosh, yes, this ought to be on every night for the next 2 months, yes, and everybody in Perth should get there to see it. And Joe pointed out to me that, of course, it's very taxing on the performers and the musicians.
Yes.
I mean, it must take a lot out of you, some of these performances.
Well, it actually brings me absolute joy and energy. It energizes me. Performing usually energizes me. I think a good performance and a in my opinion, a successful performance is where I've connected with perhaps something bigger than myself, and certainly with other people, and that's energising. So
it's performance art. You don't stand behind a curtain to do it. We were talking about festivals earlier. I think you've done a few international ones as well. You've been here and there.
Yes. Well, part of that 2018 adventure was a connection that I made during the String Mania camp, as I previously mentioned. I made a connection that allowed me to play at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and with the Edinburgh at the Edinburgh Tattoo, which goes for a month, and I played for 3 weeks as part of the Shetland Island Fiddlers, or Heltibon Hauga, as they call themselves. And that was, again, another remarkable experience that music provided. Really, every time I pick up the violin in public for a performance, it's a new experience, and I don't know. It's always the unexpected and the unexpected connection between either musical colleagues or audience or myself or something. Mm-hmm. It's just forever inspiring.
That's my experience, having heard you play on it a few occasions. I mentioned earlier the Christmas carols.
Christmas carols. You love it.
Bring that alive.
Yeah.
And inspire everyone to sing, and suddenly you realise how beautiful the music is.
Yes. And music that brings community together. I think really that is my favourite type of music. I did, as I've said, grow up with classical music and the being a performer alone with a disconnect with the audience is not as satisfying as really being able to connect with an audience, and sometimes in an orchestral setting where we don't get to talk to the audience afterwards.
It is interesting, isn't it? Yeah. It's that element of, you know, it's not rigid, but it's formal. Mm. I guess if you're managing large symphony orchestras, it's a bit harder.
Yes. I mean, Perth Symphony Orchestra is all about different. Connecting. Yeah,
yes.
That's playing music that is really accessible for people. The repertoire is really carefully crafted to connect with the particular situation, the particular concert that we're putting on that will connect with the audience. But
this next question is a bit of a strange one. I guess the answer is probably no. But is music going in new directions, or is it just quietly evolving and going this way and that, a little bit like your own career suggests?
I would say yes, it's certainly going in new directions. There's a whole world, of which I know very little, the music of video games, which is an absolutely brilliant composers are writing for that. And just last week, my nephew in Sydney, Tommaso Girotto, played with the Sydney Symphony Orchestra a concert of video game music. And he was the guest principal guitarist, but who would have thought the Sydney Symphony Orchestra would play video game music? But it's beautiful music, and again, I've played that with Perth Symphony Orchestra, playing music for video games. It's so good on the orchestras for recognising the need to connect with the market.
Really interesting. I was in New York not so many years ago, before you'd sort of think twice about going. And in the Lincoln Center, they were playing John Williams' Star Wars music.
Yes.
People I knew who were traditional concert goers were upping an RN.
Yes.
But this is the same thing, and you sit back and listen to the music.
Yes.
Video music. Now, there's something. I've
heard
something new today.
If you listen to ABC FM, there's shows, programmed in video video music for in their program.
And this and responds it's to the sort of it's games beautiful. That are being played.
Yeah. It's the games from the music because, as you can probably imagine, if a game has got beautiful music, it draws one in. To,
wow.
Film score has been around for a lot longer, of course, than video music. So that
was the sort of transition, I suppose. You get composer gets commissioned to produce the music for the film.
Yes, and of course John Williams and is a genius and has a master of
great sounds.
Yeah, great sound, just beautiful. And there's so yeah, that's been around for longer than the video game computer.
But it's in the same ballpark.
In the same ballpark of playing popular music.
Yeah.
Playing.
And it's about audiences, I suppose.
If you want to attract an audience, and some that I've done with Perth Symphony Orchestra, it's a very different crowd to what you'd see for a Mahler Symphony. Perhaps they're dressed up in their characters of the. Yes, and the arena is packed with young people who absolutely have identified with and grown up with this music, and they know it, they love it.
Well, for cricket lovers of the traditional sort, it's probably 2020 cricket versus 5-day test cricket.
Something like that.
Gee, this has been a really interesting conversation. Mm. I'm going to rush out. We're in the west end of Fremantle and we've got the fire brigade going past.
Yeah, and they're rushing past too.
Well, there's another genre of music, emergency services music.
Ah, right. Well, sometimes they do put fire engines in, and alarms and things in music.
Now, what are you going to... You brought us in with a nice little jig. What are you going to send us out on?
Fire engine music, no. okay, well, here's something that was a part of the Bespoke project. This is one that we wrote for the young woman I explained that was anxious, and she played us a song, and we wrote one in the same with the same feel. What I can't even remember what we call this. I think we named it after her.
The listeners are going to be really annoyed with me drawing this to an end because I would love you just to keep playing. But thank you so much for joining me on Fremantle Sugar News today, talking about your music, and it's been really, really interesting. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. It's been really interesting for me too.